Today is the first of a three-day series here at Federal News Radio, The Missing Pieces of Procurement Reform. Today's focus is legislating reform. Over the years, what statutes have made the most impact, what have had the least success, and what pending legislation holds the most promise. The Clinger-Cohen Act changed the landscape of federal procurement back in 1996. It gave agencies more authority and formalized the CIO position. Bill Greenwald is a former Senate staff member who helped pen Clinger-Cohen, formerly known as the Information Technology Management Reform Act. He's now a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Greenwald explains why the Clinger-Cohen Act was needed to update the prevailing law at the time.
The Brooks Act had not really conformed to the way the commercial IT industrial base was moving. And the more centralized oversight that the Brooks Act entailed really slowed down procurements. And so this Clinger-Cohen was an augmentation to the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act, which pursued, you know, greater access to commercial items. And I think in that regard, it was very successful. But FASA didn't repeal the Brooks Act, and Clinger-Cohen, by doing that, kind of finished the job, so to speak.
In many ways, it was the technology that drove a lot of this. I mean, the PC was coming into the government in a big way. And as late as the mid-80s, people were still debating whether PCs would have a place in government. But by that time, that kind of totally decentralized, networked approach to technology had completely changed from the conditions that gave rise to the Brooks Act.
Absolutely. And it's actually still, the whole issue is still relevant of where the commercial marketplace is going. And the government, you know, not realizing that there's more R&D out there now in the private sector driving these incredible technological changes than the R&D that's driving change in the Defense Department or in the government as a whole. And how to access those new practices and new technologies is you have to have a more nimble acquisition system to do that. And essentially, you know, that was the whole 1990s acquisition reform movement, so to speak.
And do you feel that nimbleness has come into the system and is still there? I mean, what's your assessment of Clinger-Cohen now in the hindsight of, what, about close to 20 years?
I think it moved very well for about 10 years. And I think you had a committed acquisition workforce, a committed political structure, and also you had budgetary constraints, which really required a movement away from government-unique and defense-unique solutions because, frankly, the government couldn't afford it. Post 9/11, the budgetary pressures eased. I think there were less focus on the benefits of the commercial marketplace, and in the last 10 years, I think we've moved away from that, and it's kind of now time to hit the reset button again.
And in the interim years, there have been pieces of procurement legislation buried in some of the National Defense Authorization Acts and so forth. I guess you could call them interim steps. What's your assessment of what has been successful in some of those and what have not done so well?
I think any of the provisions that had to do with exceptions to the current system, in other words, to gain access to different parts of the industrial base. So, for example, other transactions and improvements on the other transactions in the Space Act, which of course goes back to 1958. Rapid acquisition authorities in the early 2000s were I think very successful. The movement to prototyping and some of the evolutionary acquisition provisions in the NDAs were kind of set the policy framework.
Anything that did not work so well?
Well, I think the jury's still out on the Weapons Systems Acquisition Reform Act, which essentially tried to limit cost overruns by linking it to what are knowledge points that GAO has identified in Milestone B and C of those weapon systems. I think that is going to be successful, but what it's going to do is going to force a focus on incremental acquisition, and that's fine for probably 90% of what DOD does, but there are some programs that really need greater innovation. I think the business management change provisions of Clinger-Cohen didn't work very well. I think services acquisitions reform didn't work, and I think last assessment is that the culture didn't permanently change with acquisition reform in the 90s, and that's something that we need to focus on.
And I want to talk more about that whole culture idea, because that's really the people. But getting back to SARA, the Services Acquisition Reform Act, what was the failure mechanism there, do you think?
I think it's just something that it probably goes back to the acquisition workforce. It's just and a mind view. There's a mindset to focus and put your best people on, you know, major systems acquisition, and they never really develop that management structure for overseeing what is half of, you know, the acquisition dollars in the Department of Defense and elsewhere. I think the Air Force has started to move in that direction, but the NDA started putting provisions in 2000, and then after SARah, very similar type of provisions, and I just don't think we've been able to breach that gap.
Bill Greenwalt is a former Senate staff member and now a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. And getting to the idea of culture, I mean, that's people, and maybe the Better Buying Initiative at the Defense Department addresses that issue of training the acquisition workforce. But I guess my first question there is the FAR, which is a really big document. And some have said that you can do anything you need to do if you would only understand the FAR fully enough. Is maybe that really the only basic problem there is?
Well, you know, that may be the case, but the rituals necessary to get there, to make those interpretations, take too long, and there probably aren't enough people who really understand what the flexibilities are inherent in the FAR. So Congress has given the potential to take on greater risk and in the FAR, but unfortunately, and so there are a number of exceptions, but unfortunately, it's something that because of the incentive structure that's out there. It's hard to imagine, you know, federal acquisition officials wanting to take on that risk and responsibility unless there's some compelling need, for example, maybe the intelligence area, the special forces area.
So is the issue that we can't change the FAR, but can we do a better job of educating the people that have to work with it?
I think you do, and I think I think what really needs to happen is a lot of what was done in FASA and Clinger-Cohen was encouraging the workforce, encouraging the executive branch to take advantage of flexibilities that were out there and to look at, identify best practices that are out there in the not only the private sector market but in the other government markets, whether there are allies or in the state and local governments. And by doing that, you know, take advantage of what, you know, what new technologies that are out there. So setting that signal and sending some of those that it's okay to take a risk is important. And I think we've gotten away from that culture both in Congress and in the executive branch.
And a lot of the issues that make this stuff all come to the public forum, you know, are often, would you say, a function of requirements not being really set properly, and that sets the whole acquisition off on the wrong tangent from the outset.
No, absolutely. And the biggest issue is sometimes unrealistic requirements that and then you try to make a program based on that, and technology's not ready, or there's no possible way the schedule can meet that. So there has to be some type of balance here, and that's why I think you kind of divide the world up in between those programs that can use incremental requirements, incremental development, and those really cutting-edge programs that really push innovation. And the requirers have to understand that the technology is not there, and maybe what you're going to get is a partial solution, but it's the best you can get, and it may be revolutionary.
So in many ways, there are two kind of tension poles in this whole acquisition environment. One is the incremental versus the cutting edge in terms of what the government should be acquiring. And then there's the push and pull between giving discretion to the line acquisition people and buyers and specifiers versus centralized oversight.
I think those tensions are there. And I would add another one, which is between going out for commercial solutions to provide innovation and incrementalism, or going between a government-unique solution. So I'd say there are probably three areas of tensions. I think that's a very good way to sum it up.
And you've advanced the idea of scraping away the barnacles from the whole system on the laws, the FAR provisions, and so forth. Is that what you think is needed to go forward, some kind of a piece of maybe another piece of landmark legislation that would take away instead of add to?
Yeah, I think, you know, the FASA and Clinger-Cohen were one in a sense did that. And so perhaps every 20 or 25 years, we need to step back and reevaluate and perhaps, you know, sunset all of these laws and bring in a new Packard Commission or a new Section 800 panel to actually look at each piece of legislation and each regulation and each DOD policy and see if they work in today's environment.